Welcome, everyone, to a very, very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. This is episode 122. This is your main host and talent and person that has all of the connections in your podcast, Marcel MTG, coming at you live. We got my podcast co-hosts and my good friends. We got Mr. Bushard, a.k.a. Cripple Command. Ryan, say hello to the people.
It only kills me because you mispronounce my name the same way Marcel does.
I think it might be on purpose.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
That was perfect.
Mr. Bush.
I'm speechless. I got nothing. I don't need to have a response.
Quit dragging
to that.
Your feet, Bushard.
You know what I'm saying? Mr. Bush.
I'm sorry.
This house. And then we got everybody's favorite joke, a.k.a. Mr. Corbin Hostler, a.k.a. Buffalo Wild Wings sales executive, a.k.a. connoisseur of the boneless wing, you know, a.k.a. Mr. Coverage Man for high school volleyball games in red states. What's going on, Mr. Hostler? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I think you summed up everything I do perfectly.
Hey, man, that's great. That's great. I'm glad to be on a podcast with you, man. And we got Mr. Alt, the quintessential asshole, a.k.a. every podcast on MTG Cast co-host, a.k.a. that motherfucker that's on that other podcast where all they do is scream and get drunk, Mr. Jason Alt. How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. I have had a very busy week of being on every podcast. It's really wiped me out.
Yeah, man, that's pretty real. That's pretty real. So, and we actually have a special guest tonight. We have the finance connoisseur, the guru, the time elemental, aka the time traveler, aka Doctor Who himself, Mr. JR.
Oh no, I'm too drunk to be on the podcast tonight. I was on Money Draft and then we were finished and I was just like going into my stride at the end. And now it's like, oh man, there all of a sudden people were like, oh, we're going to like record Brainstorm Brewery now. And I was like, oh yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, no, no way.
Wait, so, does this make JR the first repeat guest who's not named John Medina?
Yeah.
No, Ray Perez. Yeah. But Ray's not a guest.
Jason Ray, Alt.
Slick's been on this cast, dude. Slick and Motika came on when they made our Brainstorm Brewery.
So here we go, the first repeats.
There's a sixth person on this podcast, Slick Jagger, but I haven't heard him talk at all yet, so I'm not really sure what's going on.
But anyways, thank you guys for coming on the podcast. Jason does Money Draft with these guys if you guys haven't listened to it. It's a lot of fun. Marcel is unable to make it tonight. He's got to work, so we decided to bring these guys on. So thank you to you guys for coming on, and that Marcel intro was one of the best I've heard.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank
you.
If only I can butcher a couple segues through this episode and then my dream will be complete.
It'll be like he's here.
It will be.
All right. So we're just going to jump in this week. We've got a couple guests on. It's going to be a lot of fun. They've already destroyed my show notes, I see. So there's that. Wow, these were mean. You guys put some mean stuff into the show notes. Anyways, this weekend we have GP New Jersey, or as Star City is calling it, probably the biggest GP to ever happen. I don't know. You guys are all planning on being there. So let's talk about that before we get into Finance 101. What are you guys looking forward to this weekend?
I don't know. I mean, as far as like actual magic is concerned, I mean, I think that Blue Red Delver is kind of the monster coming into this form, this tournament. Like everybody knows that Delver has been a powerhouse. It fell out of favor a little bit, but it was definitely tier one. And then Treasure Cruise came along and boosted the deck through the roof. So I think this GP New Jersey being what is definitely going to be the biggest legacy GP of all time. Certain people think that it's going to be the biggest GP of all time. But I think it'll be a good testing ground to see, you know, what rises to the top. Because I think no matter how big this GP is, I could suspect that we see like between 20 and 30% blue red Delver. And if this is a huge tournament, I think that could be like huge, huge for,
I mean, it's
for
a good thing that, it's a good thing that Merfolk's just going to crush all of those and win, huh?
I haven't even,
doesn't Merfolk deck? Doesn't Merfolk play Vile?
It does. However, it also plays Chalice of the Void in Legacy these days, which turns off the Delver deck. I'm pretty sure it's a terrible matchup for Merfolk. I don't know much about Legacy anymore. I just play Modern. But yeah. We're gonna have lots of Delver, lots of Sneak and Show. We might see Containment Priest pick up some play this weekend from the commander.
That's why I was asking about the Vile thing, cause I think, I don't think Containment Priest is a main deck card in any deck. I think the card is very, very overhyped, but I definitely think it's gonna see some solid sideboard play.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. What's really interesting, I guess, is if you see the blue-red Delver decks, if they can, because like Sneak and Show is one of the matchups that can actually compete with that deck. If you see any sort of Delver deck get tricky to play Containment Priest, because it has Flash, it doesn't have to be Vialed in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you guys think it's going to be the biggest ever? We've got the Star City Games hype train going here.
I don't. I disagree with that. I do not think that it is going to crack. And this is I live on the East Coast. I've gone to a lot of East Coast GPs. We have probably one of the biggest Magic scenes in the U.S., but we haven't been given that. Like, if they had a Modern Masters tournament on the East Coast, easy 6K. If they had it in New York, if they had it in Philly, if they had it in Boston, easy. I think a premier summertime, because I think summertime is key because you have all the high school players off school, college guys out of school, like, it's easy. So summertime premier GPs, I genuinely think East Coast could bring way more than West Coast. But after the success of Modern Masters in Vegas, I think that's going to be their destination. So
let me ask you this. Do you have a standard deck?
Do I have a standard deck? No. I'm a limited player.
Well, you have a limited deck? You have a Legacy deck.
No, I don't have a Legacy
deck. You got a Legacy deck. If you got a standard deck, you got a Legacy deck. That's their push. That's their push this weekend.
Yeah,
don't be scared of Legacy. If you've got a standard deck, you can play. You got Concept Arcane limited deck, you're set.
And that's cute. Some cards. That's cute, right? And a lot of the people I think that are like really Magic savvy are like saying that, and I understand that. And you know, like there are a lot of people that are like, oh man, you know, this playmat and everything I'm going to get for going to this GP is extra EV, so I'll enter it with my standard Jeskai deck. And that's fine, but like, that's not gonna bring more than 5,000 people. Like, I think that's savvy people expecting everyone to be savvy, and that's just not the case with the game that we play.
I was playing Legacy, and I watched a guy playing Reanimator lose to the Slivers Precon. I will say that. It was Legacy, like a 10-year-old kid playing the Slivers Precon, and he just stuffed the Reanimator player. And the Reanimator player was so flustered, he was trying to do shit, like, he tried to Limduel's Vault with Platinum Empyrean out and shit like that, and, like, he couldn't force a will with Platinum Empyrean out. Like,
dude, it was
hilarious.
I'm pretty sure that, like, Standard Jund, when it was, like, Bloodbraid Elf, made the day two of a Legacy GP.
Well, yeah, like, it's like Siege Rhino Modern. Those metagames get so, I don't think inbred's the right word because, you know, they are what they are, but they focus on the threats of the format. So if you show up with something like Siege Rhino to a Modern tournament, how do people kill it? Like, some of the decks have Path to Exile, and if you don't, you just hope your Tarmogoyf gets big enough. Like, it's kind of the same thing in Legacy. Like, the combo decks can, you know, probably just tear through, you know, random standard deck, but like Delver decks, stuff like that, that has all these really specialized answers, can just get blanked by standard cards. I mean, you're obviously not going to do well over the long haul of a GP playing a standard deck, but you could probably pick up some wins.
Yeah, I will say this, that there's no chance I would bet all the money, all my assets on the fact that a Legacy deck wins that GP. Like, there's, like, yeah, you could be cute. But like, if you're
going
not,
out on a limb there, aren't you?
No, well, all I'm saying is like, you guys keep bringing up like, oh yeah, like anybody with standard deck. No, and I get that's going to come into the entrance fee stuff, but don't come to the tournament expecting to do shit worthwhile financially if you're not going to play a Legacy deck that has Legacy cards.
Right. All right. So let's move on to Finance 101 for this week, which is, you know, in light of an event like this being Legacy, sometimes you can see prices on the floor of an event go wildly different from, you know, kind of the prices outside of it. I think one of the best examples was a modern, or may have been extended when it was double standard, Pro Tour several years ago. And it was like an enchant, an instant or a sorcery, some random card out of like Shadowmoor that made somebody shuffle an artifact into their deck. And in the real world, you know, this was like it's like a quarter card because it was just nothing. But it was like $5 to $10 that day because everyone needed it for a particular matchup and none of the dealers had them on them. So, I mean, Ryan, you go to a lot of events, obviously. How does the floor market differ from, you know, kind of the at-large market?
I watched a Manrique Gusari change hands for a fetch land once. I mean, it's really just about, like, what somebody needs. If you're the only person on the floor, like you said, you can charge whatever you want to have them. So really, like, if you're trying to go to these bigger Legacy events and you think that there's some new hot tech, even if it's a common or uncommon, take as many copies as you can with you because you won't regret it. I mean, I guess other than that, like the big difference is you're going to see a lot of vendors in real life fighting over a price in real time, and that doesn't really happen online. It's kind of like watching the Moto market in real life where like you'll actually see vendors walking over to other booths to see what they're selling at and then go back and adjust their own prices based on that. And I mean, just kind of keeping an eye on stuff like that, watching like what keeps trending up over that day. Go out and trade for those cards because people can go and look online. And a lot of times some of the vendors, if a card is about to spike, they'll be buying it for nearly the same price as a TCG mid just because TCG hasn't quite been bought out yet. So
I think another important thing for people to take away is if you're going to an event, and maybe you're planning on picking up some of the cards there and you may think, oh, I don't have any of this, but it's a 25-cent, 50-cent uncommon. I don't need to worry about it. A lot of times dealers they just don't have them there. So, for instance, one I expect to be in high demand this weekend is Forked Bolt, you know, which we talked about a little bit last week and has since gone up from like 50 cents to $3. I expect there's a lot of people who want those for Blue Red Delver or against Blue Red Delver this weekend. And the dealers who have them will probably be charging exorbitant amounts, and probably some amount of dealers just won't have them because it's not something that they necessarily have lying around in large quantities. So if you are planning on attending this event or an event in the future and you are almost there but need to have your deck filled out, I think it's important to try to do that before you get there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's just good preparation for any event. It tends to be the people who don't go prepared for the events are the ones who are used to just being able to walk up to vendors and get their own cards. But, yeah, absolutely be prepared because there's other going to be times too where even if the card's in demand and it's, you know, a good card and you know the dealer should have it, sometimes you show up a little bit later in on Friday and it's been sold out already. Yeah. And there's just like, and you could end up paying 2 to 3 times what the, you know, online market says it should be worth just to get it because you're at the event.
I agree with you guys, but I think, you know, like a lot of like a Forked Bolt, right? So this is the Tuesday before the event. The event officially, you know, kicks off on Friday, right? So the dealers are going to stock up on cards like a Forked Bolt, right? Like they have this information. The real disruptors of the day of are the things that come from rumors breaking about pro decks, you know, the night before, or like stuff like True Name Nemesis where, hey, you know, you can get the commander deck like the day before the event starts. So everybody, including the dealers, is going to be totally scrambling for that. Like I personally feel like the real drastic stuff that you see on the floor. Yeah. Like there's things that are like Blue Red Delver is, I would put any amount of money that is going to be the most popular deck bar none. But I feel like at this point in time, all the dealers, everybody knows that, right? They're bracing for that storm. But what's going to spike the most on the floor of an event like GP New Jersey is going to be the card that we're not talking about, right? The card that all of a sudden comes up as all the pros are playing this as an answer, or, you know, this is just something that everybody missed. Like those are the kind of cards that come up at a GP weekend. So like, I guess what I would want to ask you guys who are like way more knowledgeable about finance than I am is like, what do you do about those cards? Like, you know, if you're somebody at home and you're not on the floor, if you see the reaction coming on Twitter or you're somebody that actively monitors prices, like when something spikes like that, that's not like, hey, you know, we don't have a heads up, right? This is like a day of thing. Like, how do you guys react to that? What goes into that decision? Is it, do you kind of back off and, you know, like, all right, well, this is kind of the thing where if you're not on the floor, you miss the wave. So you wait for it to crash. Or is it like, you know, are there techniques where you can get in at the right time by like evaluating certain websites that haven't updated their stuff in time? Like how do you guys, cause that's the stuff that interests me.
Honestly, like the money I've made on those spikes isn't from being prepared and showing up with a bunch of stuff. It's from, you know, going and being able to buy cards online because people haven't heard about it yet. It's for being on the floor. And if there were a good solution, you know, and a good substitute to being on the floor, I think we would have found it by now. But honestly, there isn't much of one. You really just kind of have to be there sometimes. And you know, like, there's hype and you don't necessarily want to buy into hype, but if you can buy for the, you know, the base price and have someone who's buying into the hype buy from you, and then they have to deal with trying to get rid of the stuff, and that's their problem. That's kind of how the whole greater fool theory works, right? Like, the people that buy a card that was 25 cents, you know, and is all of a sudden $5, and they think they're gonna buy it 5 and get it to 10, don't be the guy that buys it 5. So if you see some of this hype too late, don't worry about it. You know, there's just no substitute to being on the floor sometimes, but honestly, I think if there were a, like some sort of way to get out of having to be on the floor, somebody would have found it by now because, you know, Quiet Speculation always tries to have somebody at every event. And if there were like a technique that we would have figured out, we wouldn't be doing that. But there's just no substitute to it sometimes. So if you're watching coverage closely, sometimes you can catch that stuff, but there's some stuff you just don't have to worry about. Just leave it alone. You know, sometimes you'll miss stuff and sometimes, you know, you'll miss the cycle where everybody paid too much and the stuff isn't selling.
So this is a question of genuine curiosity. So is there anything like if I, like as a listener of the podcast, right, if I follow you guys on Twitter and you guys like happen to like update about stuff that's going on the floor and I'm at home, or there's other people that I could follow that would provide that kind of information, right? Is there some sort of like triage or some advantage I can get on the market by like, you know, like, and this is from a totally uneducated person, like obviously, like I would think that a site like Star City and Channel Fireball update their prices faster than other sites. So if I'm tied in to people that are on the floor, is there an opportunity to maybe buy from these sites that don't have the prices updated as fast and then try to make a quick gain? Or is that something that's like, usually cards don't go up by that amount, so it's not really that relevant? Or is that something like as someone who wants to be finance savvy?
That's the one time I really advocate buying from your Channel Fireballs and your Star Cities. And the places that may charge a little more, but they're less likely to snap cancel your order. Like if you get Channel Fireball, you'll get them. They've only canceled a few of my orders. Star City has only canceled a few of my orders. For the most part, and a lot of tips I've gotten just standing next to dealers, like before the Invitational, everybody was walking up, it's like, dude, how many Rocks Faith Menders do you have? And I was like, none. You know, I went online and Rocks Faith Mender was 75 cents and I, you know, just bought as many as I could because I got that tip. And sure enough, it hit like $5 that night.
But it doesn't matter unless you have bought from a store that will actually honor your order. And
yeah,
as much
if
as
you buy from
we
just
like,
some rando on TCG Player, they're like, oh, I'm not sending these out. These are $5 now.
As much as we like to, you know, rail on all these vendors who don't honor their orders, you know, as they should honor their orders. At some point, you just have to recognize that's the way it is. And it's better to pay a little more for someone who will honor your order than to get the bottom dollar from someone who won't.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing that I'm disconnected from personally. Like, I've never, like, tried to speculate on a pro tour day, so I don't really know a lot about, like, people honoring and not honoring your orders. So that's, I mean, I've heard you guys talk about it on the cast, but I don't, I've never experienced it firsthand, so that's, like, That's definitely a thing that I wouldn't consider as an outsider going into
that
kind of scenario.
That's a good question, and we're glad you asked, because there are very few times that we advocate not just buying the cheapest copy, and that's one time that I absolutely advocate not buying the cheapest copy.
Yeah, the one other note I'll make on this before we move on is that a lot of these things, you know, it feels like they sneak up on you because you don't hear about it until a pro starts doing it. A lot of the times these things exist on Magic Online. All the Delve decks were on Magic Online before they really hit paper. The Forked Bolts rose on Magic Online before they rose on paper. It's happened numerous times in the past where the online market will lead. So you have to, obviously it's difficult to keep track of all of that and to find it. But if you do have the time or the energy and care to peruse Magic Online deck lists, you can get an idea ahead of time. You can see some stuff coming. So it's just something to keep in mind. All right, let's move on to some emails here. Knock out our first one here from Joshua Anchor, or as he calls himself, Esper Josh. He says, "Dear Brainstorm Brewery, I have a Thassa that is ripped in half. How can I get value from this card?" He says, "Maybe I could trade it to a kid and tell him he could proxy it when he plays with his friends, but that's no fun and sounds like a pain in the butt. Should I just throw it away? Is it worthless? It is a shame to throw away two pieces of a mythic rare. Is there any way it can be saved? Thanks and keep up the great work with the podcast, Josh." I actually had somebody last week who wanted me to play Flip It or Rip It with his pack, which if you don't know is where you shuffle the pack, put it face down. You either flip one face up or you rip it in half. He wanted to play. I joined in and I savagely ripped his Polluted Delta in half. So what do you guys think about how to, once a card has been ripped, how you can salvage it?
Is that a real question? Is that
so?
Well, the question, I mean, obviously.
So here's what I did.
What do you do with them? Is there anything to them? Do you throw them away? What?
So here's what I did. I actually kind of accidentally made some value on this, but I went around for a while buying all of these cards. They were like destroyed, ripped in half, whatever it may be, and I actually put an EDH deck together for a little while. And it was just the most damaged beat up cards I could possibly make, because I'd seen all these pimp EDH decks and I wanted to do exactly the opposite. So I mean, that's one option. If you just want to like start collecting this stuff, because you can get it for virtually free.
But okay, but that's a different subject, and I like talking about that because I really like your whole get the cheapest possible copy to play with. But we're talking a card that is actually physically in two pieces.
Yeah, I mean, like that's what I'm saying. Like that's literally it. That's all I've got for you. Like I made a deck. That was what I did. Good luck selling them. The stuff that wasn't ripped in half, I actually did make value off of later when they did open up TCG Player publicly, because I was able to sell all that stuff as like damaged or heavily played, and some of the stuff still sold for incredible prices. But I got it for like dollars, you know, for $20, $30, $40 cards. But outside of that, there's not much hope for cards once they're in two pieces. Outside of, you know, a piece of power or something like that, it's good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I have a pile of ripped in half Beta Lotuses that I just use as like scrap toilet paper. So
I've seen them ripped in half. It's sad.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tragic, but somebody's got to use them.
I mean, not usually, not at that point.
Well, I mean, speaking of the Polluted Delta that got ripped in half, I mean, somebody picked it up and said, "I'm using this in a commander deck." So, you know, I mean, for the most part, there's not a ton you can do with them unless you can personally, you know, find something to do with it. All right, so let's move on to our next one here from Pete. He says, "Hey guys, really enjoy the show. Thanks for giving me a reasonable perspective on this expensive hobby. I have a question on the pre-release promo foils. I have a Siege Rhino, and I'm wondering where I can find good pricing information. Prices are all over the place on different sites if they even have it listed. TCG Player and Puka Trade seem to be around 30 to 35, but I've seen eBay as low as 13 this week. MTGO Goldfish doesn't track it separately from the normal foils. What is the outlook on something like this? Should I sell them to the Siege Rhino hype? I don't need the money for current standard, but it would be good towards building a modern deck, so I can hold on to it if I need to. Thanks again, Pete."
Wait. So my suggestion, because I actually have this exact same dilemma come up, would be if you can find somebody who actually will take it at that 30 or 35 all day, every day, get rid of it, it's very unlikely you're probably going to get closer to the 12 to 15. That price is not real. It's been like that since it came out, and I have yet to find a single person actually looking for it. I've had mine up on TCG Player, and I just took it down finally when I took my store down. And well, it's a card that will not sell. I kept dropping the price.
So
I'm glad. I mean, because this is something we talked about. And when the set came out, you know, this kind of was something that I'd given a little thought to, but not a lot. And I think it was Jason who, maybe pointed out that these are unprecedented in that there's different ones and they may perform closer to a foil copy than a non-foil copy, which is kind of opposite of how those promo cards have done in the past. So I'm glad that we're kind of ahead of it. Like you said though, it's obviously a very difficult to move item. So.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, if it was an eternal playable, if any of these were eternally playable, it would be a different thing, because then, like, that stamp would show some sort of premium. It's just like, you know, foils in general. But Siege Rhino is good, it's modern playable, but it's certainly not $35 modern playable.
Like, did the listener even specify if he had the card online or in paper? Like, why would you check Goldfish and TCG Player? Like,
Goldfish tracks paper as well.
Goldfish tracks paper as well?
It's actually, I use it sometimes because it's nice to see how the paper and the online prices stack up to see if something's due for a correction. You know, if the lines are diverging, that means the paper copy could be due for a correction, and if they're going up together, it probably isn't.
That shows my ignorance as someone who usually only plays on Magic Online and usually only drafts.
You're keeping us honest because we're not glossing over things that are obvious to us. So it's like doing finance 101 every time we mention something.
I just didn't know, like, cause normally, like, I don't hear somebody say, like, oh, I checked MTG and then I checked, Goldfish and it's like, what? Like, yeah, but yeah, I mean, if it's in, this is just somebody that plays Magic. Siege Rhino is not a $30 card. There's no way in hell that it will sustain $30 for over a 12 month period. If you can get it for 25 cash, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that card is a flash in the pan. It's cute, it's good. But it's just going to be another victim of something better in the future, in my opinion.
If it's not playable outside of Standard, you don't want a foil copy.
Right?
It's getting played in Modern, but I don't know. I don't think that it will get played in Modern for another year. We'll see.
I think that when we're talking about these pre-release foils, the important thing is to identify those that – somebody will pay that extra amount. So the one that jumps out to me is Narset.
Yeah, Narset, absolutely.
Your commander players are the people who are going to give you something more for that.
See the
one.
Unwritten, Hardened Scales.
I like Narset especially because it's the actual commander.
Foil Narset's too cheap right now because it's one of the most unfair commanders ever printed. Yeah. Maelstrom Wanderer players are taking their Maelstrom Wanderer decks apart to play Narset.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if we're talking about that's going to be really one of the ones and probably the trendsetter in terms of what these can do. Your legacy playables, your maybe modern playables, your commander ones, especially I think are the places to be on those pre-release foils. All right, let's hit up one more here. This one comes to us, from, Brandon Smith, or as he, calls himself in this email, Professor Murder. Sure. He says, hey, Brew Crew, when I buy boxes, I buy Russian boxes. I recently pulled a foil Wooded Foothills that based on recent eBay sales, I would value it around $350 to $400. However, there's a huge and first world problem I have. I don't know where or how to sell and trade it, and even if that's what I should be doing, and I certainly don't know if this is something I need to act quickly on or if I should hold on to it for a long time. So I thought perhaps it would be beneficial to your other listeners to talk a little on air about what to do when you run into these rare gems. You recently did a 101 segment on foreign cards that I thought this would be an interesting and informative follow-up. These kinds of cards can be real specialty items. Thanks so much. So here's my take on that. I actually had a friend who a little while back pulled a foil Russian Flooded Strand, and he had the same problem. He had no idea what to do with it. And I said, well, you can eBay it, and you can, just get eaten up by eBay fees. You can try to sell it individually. That's difficult. This is actually one of those things where having a good network comes in handy. And what I mean by that is, that is a card in order to get your full value out of. You really do need to have an individual seller. What I ended up suggesting to this friend of mine was to use the high-end Magic Facebook group, which is for cards that are, I think it's like $75 or $100 or more. And he ended up getting like $700 for a foil Russian Flooded Strand on there. Yeah. If you have something high-end like that and you don't want to just eBay it, I mean, I would suggest looking at that place. That's a really good outlet. Other than that, I mean, you have to try to leverage your contacts, whether that's locally or on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Cause really the best way is to find, that individual buyer who will want it. And they're out there even if they're hard to find. Yeah, you know, over the long term, you're probably going to be fine holding onto a foil Russian Fetchland.
Yeah. I think that, and I talked about this, a little bit on Money Draft earlier, which will come out 2 weeks after this podcast. I talked to my good friend Mark, won Vintage Masters and he got the, full painting Mox Pearl thing, right? And, when he was trying to sell it and he got offered $5,000 cash on the floor and he didn't take it. And a lot of people were like, oh my God, like why wouldn't you take that? Blah, 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 blah. But he actually intelligently he has a good Magic network, but it's not like somebody who's like really tied into like Magic dealers and everything. So he used an esteemed person that he knew in the Magic industry as far as buying and selling cards as a commission person. And they got him the deal and he sold the Mox Pearl for $10,000 and got a commission on it. And I, you know, like when you're selling high end items like that or like unique things, right? Like you have to intelligently think about them and say, yeah, like I could get this much if I need it, but if I take the time to handle it correctly, you know, you could get more money, right? Like if you, like it's the same with anything. Like if you find some sucker. If you find a good antique, right, and you just like do it yourself and put it in a local auction, you're going to get way less money if you hire a Sotheby agent and you go through the channels and you pay the commissions. And yeah, you're going to pay a commission, but most likely if you have the right kind of item, it's going to go for higher than you would get if you try to do it alone. So, you know, if my advice, if you have like foreign foils like that, that are like any card that's over like $200, like if you're trying to sell that, and you're not tied into the finance community, your best bet to get the most value is to find someone that you trust and offer them a commission and get them to work their network for it. Because honestly, the best advice anybody could give you in life is have a good network. And to make the most value out of cards, especially high value cards, you're going to need a good network.
Think about who's buying.
Exactly.
If you're selling to an end user, you know, somebody who wants the card for them, you're probably going to get the best price possible. If the person that you are selling to wants to be the guy that buys from you for a price and then sells it to that end user for a price, there's incentive for them to buy it from you at the price they're offering. So just think about where the card's going. If you are selling to somebody like me who wants to sell it for more, the amount of money you get less than the total I'm going to get is the amount of money you pay me to deal with the hassle of trying to get more from somebody else. If you're willing to do that hassle yourself, you should get the most money. If you're not, then that's, you know, the cut I take for finding the person that'll pay more. So if you're okay not dealing with it, you know, and maybe you're losing 30%. If you're okay losing 30% on a $20 card, fine. If it's 30% on a $900 card, or in this case, a $10,000 card in the case of that pearl, maybe you might want to think about it, doing that hassle yourself. You know, finding someone who will pay more. And just think about who you're selling it to and what their motivation is for buying it.
Right. All right, so what do you guys think? Picks of the week next?
It's time for the pick of the week.
JR, I'm going to put you on the spot. You ready to give us a guest pick of the week?
Sure. I mean, I have to disagree with Marcel on the last episode. Like, the Vintage Masters online has just been a death trap. It's just one of those things where, you know, like, sure, they might not run the drafts again next quarter, but who's to say? Like, you know, it's just been, since they came out, there's only been, I think, 9 weeks total where the drafts haven't been running since, like, middle of June or so, when the Vintage Masters drafts came out. there were 3 weeks in like July or whatever, and like 6 weeks recently, but like 6 weeks after they just like finally went off on the cons drop on October 3rd or whatever, like 6 weeks later, they come back. So, I don't know, but that's all in the past. But the thing is, like, you know, to buy them down here, you have to think to yourself, like, are they going to be, is they going to come back next quarter? I don't know.
They so, I mean, next quarter. What's your take on that? Do you think people should be getting into Vintage Masters or getting rid of it?
It depends. If you really want to play Vintage, that's the overriding thing, you know. But most people don't really have an overriding desire to play Vintage. So I think that's the main thing. And, you know, I wouldn't want to have a bunch of money invested there when I could have it even in Standard or Modern and have, like, more fun, dynamic formats.
I don't know. I think that on that, you know, that just how many Vintage dailies have fired, right? Like that, like.
Sure.
How many Vintage dailies have fired? Like so many are just going down the toilet. And I also, I don't really have a pick of the week. This isn't, I don't know, but either way, like I don't think the Vintage staples, like I know that you guys talked about it on the last cast and Marcel and Jason went back and forth, but I just don't think like, I don't think you want to get into it. Like you might want to get into Vintage Masters at the very, very end of this next draft cycle. That would be the time that I would get into it, because if this doesn't go well for them, I don't see them doing it again, you know, for another, you know, at least 9 months or so.
So I guess Vintage as a format just hasn't gained a lot of steam online.
That's true. It's just hard to predict Wizards. I think it's a broader sort of theme. Like, it's really hard to predict exactly what Wizards is going to do, because in part because they're so responsive to the community, you know?
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. Well, Jason or Ryan, either of you want to go next?
I'll go. Here's a card that's on its way down, and it's going to hit half of its peak price. And I think that has something to do with the cyclical nature of Legacy. And I think the card is going to be too cheap if it goes below $10. The card, of course, I'm talking about is Cabal Therapy. Now, Cabal Therapy is not playable in Modern, which hurts its upside a little bit when compared to something like, I guess, Thoughtseize, maybe? I don't know. Therapy's just a very good card, and there weren't a ton of Judgment cards. So it was printed in Graveborn as a foil, and there's a foil FNM, you know, foil. So the Graveborn is about 13, the FNM's about 20, and then the set foil's about 50. I think the non-foils are a fine place to be if they ever go below $10. You know, I realize that Legacy is a format that people foil out, but Cabal Therapy at $10 just seems too cheap to me.
So what is it about? I mean, do you have, it's come down from, I mean, a peak of 20 for a day, but I mean, it had held 15 for a little while after a spike at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And it's currently down to about $12.
It's the metagame that's doing that.
Do you see it coming back? Do you think there'll be Treasure Cruise bannings or something that makes it rotate back around or what?
Or like just a creature deck or a creature worth sacrificing? Because really, it was getting more play when people were playing the Nykvit style decks, where you're sacking the Veteran Explorer. I don't think Cabal Therapy is ever getting reprinted, and I don't think there's never going to be more copies. So I think it just takes because it's a cyclical card. It's spiked and gone down based on the cycle of the metagame so many times. But what Cabal Therapy does is so good because it gives you a chance to get multiple cards for one mana. And it gives you a chance to get multiple cards for zero mana.
Right.
It's one of the, it's just so good. If you know their hand, it can really blow them out. If you have a creature worth sacrificing, you know, that's even better. Sacking Veteran Explorer to a Cabal Therapy when you'd already just seen their hand is devastating. Especially if they have two copies of something. So.
This would be a really interesting card in Modern. I wish it was legal in Modern.
Yeah, I know. So the fact that it's that good, there's not likely to be another discard spell that does something better because, you know, having the flashback mechanic is so important to why Cabal Therapy is so good. I think that it just, there's a cyclical nature to the metagame, and I think when a Cabal Therapy style effect goes, you know, comes back into vogue, you're gonna see that people don't have their copies, and, that, if it goes below 10, I think I'm a buyer. But I'm okay. I'm not going to spend all my cash right when it crosses the $10 threshold because I want to see how low it gets, but I don't think we've seen the last of Cabal Therapy, and I think it's proved that it can be a $15 card, and it's proved that it can be a $20 card overnight, and if you're listing your copies for sale because you bought them when it was 8, you're going to be really glad. This is okay. Just something that seems like you don't have to say, oh, the metagame's going this way right now, pick them up, because you just know that it's going to inevitably. This is something I like trading for at about 10 or less. So I'll be trading for these once it gets a little cheaper.
Sure. Okay. Brian, what do you got?
I'm actually going to follow suit with the whole common uncommon thing we got going here. I think Jataxian Probe is too cheap. It is only a common with all
Which
these
version?
Other things. I don't care. In okay. general, too cheap. The promo was $20 at one point. It's back down to like 5. The regular copies you can find as cheap as 50 cents. However, there is a big discrepancy right now between like the mid and what you can actually find them for. And the copies are kind of slowly disappearing. Part of that could be the whole fork bowl. People just like buying all the stuff they need for Delver. And there's just not being enough copies of Jataxian Probe to quite, you know, soak up the market. However, I really can't see that card sitting at the 50 cents to a dollar it's at now. It's played in not only Delver, it's played in all these Jeskai Ascendancy decks.
Yeah,
it gets played in Modern.
What card are you talking about? Oh, okay. Alright, yeah.
I think it's a card that no one else really thinks about in those decks, but really, like, you look at how many Legacy decks run that card, even as a one or a two of, and you start to realize, like, just how impactful it actually is on the format. Combo decks run it to be able to look for the Force of Will, things like that.
It's the next $6 common?
I don't necessarily think it's going to be that. I think it's more probably for the player that you want to pick these up. I don't know if I'd be specking super hard, because this is one of those cards, too, where, you know, if you're going to be selling to a buy list, you're not going to get a huge amount of money back out of it.
Good spec at 50 cents 6 months ago.
Yeah, but you can still find them for 50 cents. That's the thing, is like there's the TCG number on them is like between 50 cents and a dollar for a lot of copies. However, that's really been soaked up here in the last couple of days, and I think that we're going to see that become a $3 card, $2 card, and it's never going to go back.
Right. Well,
and
I mean, I think the
promos being at 5 to 7 right now is insane. I think those promos should be 20 again.
Yeah, TCG mid on this as of today is 225, so I think the cheap copies are quickly drying up. I do like the call a lot on the promo.
I can't believe, I just assumed the promo was still $20, because when it hit $20, I'm like, alright, that seems like a ceiling, at least for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's
I'm gonna stay out.
Steadily come down, but I mean, it's been sitting between 8 and 7 for the past 3 months.
It's such a good card, and with Jeskai, Ryan's absolutely right, with Jeskai Ascendancy, any free spell is good. I like free spells, you know.
Well, before we go any
Force
farther,
of Will's
then,
free. That's a good spell.
Before we go any farther, then I get my pick jacked.
Well, I got a pick too. I thought of one during all. All right. Banter.
Well, mine is Foil Gutshot. What is yours?
That's not mine. So go ahead.
Okay. Good. All right. No, I mean I was literally on the same line as where Ryan was, looking at free spells for Ascendancy and just in general. I mean, if everything is about blue red tempo, then a card that costs no mana and can kill a number of relevant threats is pretty good. So, I mean, regular jet shots are 50 cents right now. I really like the foils, though. The foils are $3. And, we've seen some of the, I mean, foil fork bolts, like $20. Obviously, gut shot is not as played as that in, like, Legacy. But I think at $3, gut shot foils could easily, follow the Jataxian Probe and going up.
I assumed it was much more than that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly
right.
And
asked me before you said that, what a foil gutshot goes for. If we'd played what's it worth, like we used to, and you said, hey, what's a foil gutshot? I would have said 10 to 12.
Yeah, absolutely. And, there's not a ton out there at that $3 mark, which it's definitely a card ripe for a spike. So
now,
I would not be at all surprised to see it go in the next month.
Since last week, Corbin has been talking about Forkbolt. This is his pick of the week. He wrote that Empeopled article that some, you know, people have been reading. And when you think about what Forked Bolt is doing for you, it's really good in, you know, the Delver mirror. Gutshot's not a card that you need to play in the mirror. You don't need access to red mana to Gutshot. So it doesn't have the raw power that Forked Bolt does, but it solves some of the same problems. Anytime you've ever been like, I guess, one to your dude, one to the face on a Forked Bolt, which is fine. You know, that's a fine play. That's a situation where you'd probably be okay going two to your own face and one to their dude. So, especially in a non-red deck. So the fact that it can do some of the same things as Fork Bolt, but it's not limited by color, that gives it real upside. And we're comparing that $3 foil to a $20 one.
Yeah, and it gets you going in Ascendancy as well. I mean, it not only kills the mana dorks out of that deck, but it's something that deck can use to stabilize or start their combo from no mana. So lots of applications for
it. So my pick, and this is just, and this is like totally baseless, right? I have no finance knowledge. But going on what we talked about earlier as far as cards on the floor being more valuable, and then what you guys have talked about now with Forkbolt and Gutshot, I honestly think like my pick of the week is going to be Volcanic Fallout, right? Because it's three mana. And it's kind of clunky for Legacy. But if I was a betting man, I would say that one of the most popular red decks that's going to be in the format, or one of the most popular decks that's going to be in the format is going to be just red. And if you're going to get past Blue-Red Delver, right, Volcanic Fallout, one, kills Young Pyromancer and all its tokens. It kills Flip Delvers, and it can't be countered. So none of the spells the Blue-Red Delver is going to play are going to stop it. So I understand, like, Forkbolt is extremely powerful. Gutshot is extremely powerful. But Volcanic Fallout is an uncommon. It's been a while. I think it got reprinted in, like, Phyrexia versus the Coalition, maybe. I'm not sure when the last time Fallout was reprinted, but I think that if you're going to combat the blue-red decks and if you're going to go like super, super deep, which I think, you know, a GP is hyped as much as GP New Jersey, people are going to go super, super deep. Like, I think that the Fallout, because one, it not only kills Delver, but it kills Flip Delvers. And two, that it can't be countered and it's Legacy. So even if you're the kind of person who wants to go in to GP New Jersey and play a budget-ish deck, Fallout seems like a great option, right? Because you're gonna, like, Fallout deals with elves, Fallout deals with the blue-red Delver, and it deals with Flip Delver, so you don't have to worry about that. Like, I just think that if we're gonna stay on the theme of commons and uncommons, I think that Fallout, like, I don't know what it's worth now.
It's about, Volcanic Fallout TCG Mid, it's like 75 cents for the original Conflux, but it's as cheap as like 30 cents in Conspiracy. The fact that it was an Arch Enemy and Conspiracy, and it was a player reward, the player reward one's like $2. That hurts its upside because there are so many copies available. Like, I see Near Mint copies for 15 cents right now.
And that's, you know, that's fair, but I wouldn't be surprised if on the floor this weekend when we're there, we see them for $3.
So you're saying because the dealers aren't just going to bother bringing them?
I just don't think it's on the radar. Like, okay. I don't know if it's a worthy pick of the week or not, but I think that card is something that can certainly make a splash this weekend at New
Jersey. So
more so than people think, and I'm not really sure what the implications are for that, but I think that if I had to pick a card that I would want to watch, that would be it, because I think that would be, I think there's potential for a lot of movement in a card that's relatively stagnant over the last 3 years.
So maybe if you had them, you might consider taking them to New Jersey and just having them on you?
Yeah. If you're going to New Jersey, bring your foil, bring your alternate art or whatever you have. Like, I don't know if the Conspiracy art's different or anything, but like, you know, if I was going to GP New Jersey and I gave a fuck, cause I feel one of those two categories, I would bring my Volcanic Fallouts. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if you guys completely disagree with me or you think there's any basis to that statement, but we'll see.
I mean, that's somewhat fair. The only thing I caution is that it would have to do kind of a lot to move where it is now. So, like, there's not much downside, but I think the upside's a little bit limited. I think if you are going to take advantage of any price fluctuation, it'll be like you said, the sort of like, oh, everyone's sold out, there's a demand on the floor that isn't being met with the number of copies currently in New Jersey. So that's something to think about. but again, I think the upside's kind of limited, so I definitely wouldn't buy into these for cash, but I think you're talking a different technique, and that's something I could get behind.
So speaking about not buying things up for cash, how about wrapping up the podcast, guys?
Oh, so you're banging your Marcel role?
He really is Marcel.
I did it, right?
Yes. That was the Marcellius segue ever. I'm so proud.
I'm really trying hard, guys.
That was beautiful.
It was. It was gorgeous.
All right. Well, I'm going to – I really don't want to start the shout-out train, but I do have to make one. I was on the Cheat Sheet podcast this week. If you guys go check out that website, it was a great experience to have on there, talk fantasy football. Felt a little bit like doing, you know, my weekly radio show talking about football. So if you guys get a chance, I would certainly go suggest checking them out. It was a good time, and you can find them at I'll just check. Let me get the actual.
We could put it in the show notes so you're not stuttering for 5 minutes.
That's a much better idea.
Would you like to do that?
All right. Let's do that.
Well, I have a shout out as well. One I forgot to do last week, actually. Shout out to Brian Dale and the rest of the MTG Finance group on Facebook. If you are on Facebook currently and not a member of that group and interested in Magic Finance, it's not a bad place to go. It's, you can really range from any of the beginner questions up to the more experienced stuff. It's just something to check out. You'll see a lot of questions that you may not have thought to ask yourself, but are fairly relevant.
I would second that. That's
Brian
a pretty good
Dale
group.
Brian Dale has just started writing articles also.
Hey, it's JR here. I blacked out for a while there. But
perfect end of the cast right there.
That's my boy.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, you know. But, you know, how you doing there? All right.
Well, anyways, guys, thank you two for coming on. It's always fun to have you guys on the cast, so thanks for coming and fill in the Marcel role this week, Slick.
Looking forward to this weekend, if I actually get to see you guys.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, totally, yeah. Like, you're going to be sleeping on my floor, dude. Like,
Shout out to Jason Ault, JR, Ryan Bushard, and Marcel for hanging out with us in Manhattan, and shut up, Corbin.
Okay, great. And that's it. That's a perfect ending spot.
Listen to the Money Draft podcast. It's like this podcast, only slightly better.
We'll be back next week with more Brainstorm Bird.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.
Let's podcast. I have to have my work done by 10, so we need to be done here by 9:30.
9:30, motherfucker! It's 8:57.
No, fucking time zones.
All right, whatever. Listen, get it in then. One of you dickheads do the intro, and let's get into this.
Get it in.
I'm going on mute. I'll see you guys in 45 minutes.
No, we need you to do the smooth
I'm
intro.
I'm just joking. I'm not doing the intro.
You're the intro guy. Let's go.
You want me to do the intro?
You just did it.
It can't
now
be any of us.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta introduce it like Marcel, though. You gotta
you
do
go
a Marcel impression.
Trying to put yourself on mute was the intro.
Welcome to a very special episode? Is that what he always says?
Welcome,
yeah, there you go.
To another very special episode.
All right.